Officials close a dangerous section of the Bitterroot River. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce looks at the opportunities and challenges facing young farmers. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with Lieutenant Governor Angela McLean about the importance of learning how government works and how you can participate. The State Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has issued an emergency closure for a section of the Bitterroot River near a diversion dam where a young girl drowned last year. The emergency rule put in place today closes the river near Corvallis to all floating between the Woodside and Tucker Crossing fishing access sites because fast-moving water is making it difficult to portage around a diversion dam. The Ravalli County search and rescue crews have already responded to at least two accidents this year. Several were reported last year. A six-year-old girl drowned last June, and a man and his sons were trapped in the backwater below the dam for nearly an hour last July until they were rescued. FWP says the order will be lifted when conditions for portaging around the dam improve.
And in other news from around the state, a Kalispell woman who pleaded guilty to pushing her new husband off a cliff in Glacier National Park last summer plans to appeal her 30-year prison sentence for his death. Attorneys for 22-year-old Jordan Lynn Graham filed the notice of appeal with the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals yesterday. She was sentenced late last month for the death of 25-year-old Cody Johnson. The notice says Graham plans to appeal over several issues, including prosecutors raising the issue of premeditation in a sentencing memorandum. Graham pleaded guilty to second-degree murder, which does not involve premeditation. The notice says she also plans to appeal U.S. District Judge Don Malloy's decision not to allow her to withdraw her guilty plea.
A retired judge says an investigation into the Ravalli County Treasurer's Office found personal dissatisfaction and conflict among employees, but no criminal conduct, as alleged by Treasurer Valerie Stamey after she was placed on administrative leave. Retired District Judge Nels Swandle released an 8-page report yesterday saying he hoped the level of dysfunction he found in the treasurer's office does not exist in other county offices and recommended hiring a consultant to identify and resolve any issues that still exist. Swandle was asked to investigate after Stamey alleged files were missing from the treasurer's office, that the county was illegally selling tax liens, and that employees were funneling tax deeds to certain purchasers. Swandle says mistakes were made, but nothing was done illegally. Swandle said Stamey declined his request to interview her.
The Montana State Veterinarian says Montanans raising pigs need to be meticulously careful about their animals to prevent further spread of a virus that's killed millions of piglets in the United States. Porcine epidemic diarrhea has been detected on two Montana pig farms, one Hutterite colony near Harlowtown and another near Great Falls. Hutterite colonies account for about 95% of the state's $24.7 million hog industry. State veterinarian Marty Zalewski says PED affects pigs of all ages, but nursing pigs of less than 3 weeks old seems particularly vulnerable to the virus. That fatality rate approaches 100%.
It creates a diarrhea and vomiting where those piglets just cannot maintain hydration. And so they just expire from just the secondary effects from losing all of that fluid.
Zalewski says the pig virus is not unlike the lethal and highly transmittable disease parvo, which affects dogs. He says the first cases of porcine epidemic diarrhea was most likely imported to the United States from another country sometime early last year. Zalewski says he's grateful Montana's exposure rate has, at least so far, been relatively limited.
And hopefully with summer coming, with warmer weather coming, we'll be able to maintain that success. The virus survives a lot better when it's cold, humid, and so the survival can be several weeks during the winter, but it dies fairly rapidly when the weather's warmer and drier. And keeping in mind also that it's a lot more difficult to disinfect equipment and vehicles when it's cold outside as well.
And proper disinfection procedures are critically important in stemming the virus's tide. Any contact with other hogs, even equipment that's been in contact with other hogs, can potentially harbor PED.
So we're advising folks to have a kind of an animal handling side and an off-site non-animal side, make sure that they don't use the same clothing. They disinfect between going between their street clothes and their animal handling equipment and clothing. We're actually recommending that folks have a clean and dirty line. You know, one example would be to have a bench that would be in the middle of, let's say, a thoroughfare, where everything that goes beyond the bench on the animal side is different clothing, disinfected boots, so that way they don't kind of get lazy and allow the exposure of pigs to contaminated equipment or clothing.
Zalewski concedes the extra biosecurity steps are lots of work, but key to preventing more infections. The virus does not affect humans or other animals.
Montana is steeped in agriculture. It's prominent in the state's history. It's still our number one industry. It's a changing world for farmers, though, and young people looking to get into the field are facing very different challenges. But Capital reporter Dan Boyce says the modern age is also bringing unique agricultural opportunity.
It's right at that time of year where it's starting to make sense to dig in the dirt again and start planting.
Spinach, radish, and watermelon.
Allie Ritz is 24 years old. She just finished college last spring in Portland. She's using an old wood-handled pitchfork to turn over earthen rows. It's her first day as an intern with Glory Farm, a small CSA north of Helena. Oh, CSA, that's...
Community-supported agriculture.
Bill Iman is one of the owners of Glory Farm. With a community-supported agriculture project, people buy a share of Bill's garden. Glory Farm does the growing.
We would provide produce for these people that buy into our garden.
And Allie, as one of the interns, she'll be a part of that process.
Start to finish of the whole season. Get to work some time in the greenhouse, just learn everything. And then I'll do, like, the harvesting.
And she'll assemble baskets of the food for the people who bought in.
People actually seeing where their food comes from and being thrilled about it and get to educate them about it as well.
All this local food movement, and it's just exploded in the last few years.
That is Ron DeYoung. He's the director of the Montana Department of Agriculture.
We have young people that are, you know, buying small acreages, raising very high-value crops, going into the food systems, going into high-end restaurants, that sort of thing.
Looking at long-term trends, the number of people going into agriculture in Montana is still going down slightly. It has for decades. The average age is still climbing. But DeYoung says this greater demand for local food has been fostering a new optimism for agriculture, and that is an area of growth. The nonprofit Helena Community Gardens recently held this Grow Local event. It brings in area growers to sell their products, to meet each other, like Jacob Cogill.
Co-owner and farmer of Prairie Heritage Farm.
He's 36 years old. He's farming on about 60 acres northwest of Great Falls. He grows vegetables for one of those CSAs.
We raise turkeys for Thanksgiving, and we also grow specialty grains like ancient heritage wheat and barley.
He loves the work. He is making money, but there are caveats.
Both my wife and I have multiple off-farm jobs, and those are constantly changing and moving, and we're dropping some, adding others. We're farming full-time, but we're not making a living farming full-time.
You know, the farm that I bought from my dad.
Again, Montana Department of Agriculture Director Ron DeYoung.
If one of my three kids actually wanted to do the same thing that I did, it wouldn't pay raising the kind of crops that I raised.
He says farmers have to diversify more than before, find ways to add value to their products. But at the same time, technology is making diversification easier and making it easier to connect new producers to new markets. And so small farms like Jacob Cogill's Prairie Heritage Farm, they are on the rise. Very large farms are growing in popularity too, as family farms consolidate into more industrial operations. Director DeYoung says the problem is the middle-sized farms. They're the ones that are disappearing.
Now, to have rural communities really be successful, it's the farmers in the middle that make it go. They stay there, they raise their kids there, they're the ones that support the schools, they're the ones that support the doctors.
DeYoung says the challenge for him and for policymakers is to find ways to grow the small farms, like Prairie Heritage, into the medium-sized farms and make that a profitable move. Back on the tiny CSA outside of Helena, Glory Farm, Intern Allie Ritz finishes tilling up the rows. She hopes to one day work in teaching young people about farming. She believes she will be able to make a living at it.
I mean, I think it's more of a living of happiness. There may not be a lot of money, but I've definitely, with my years, young years, realized that like happiness isn't in the money.
Rather, she says happiness lies in community, and food's a big part of that. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Angela McLean has only had her new job a couple of months, and it looks like a good fit. Governor Steve Bullock appointed the former Anaconda High School teacher to be his lieutenant governor in February to replace John Walsh, who replaced Max Baucus in the U.S. Senate. McLean had previously served on the State Board of Public Education and was chair of the State Board of Regents, so state government was not unfamiliar. McLean was in Missoula today as part of a project to train teachers on how to enhance civics education in the classroom. In this feature interview with News Director Sally Mock, McLean says educating not just students, but everyone about civics is crucial for a participatory democracy.
It's so critical that we impress upon folks the importance of knowing what their rights are and knowing how to defend them, knowing the importance of registering to vote and then following through and actually voting. And I think that in the end, if we can impress that on more members of our society as a whole, we will be a stronger society as a whole.
Many people believe, and I think it's true, that civics education has slipped in recent years. Where do you think the gaps are? It does seem like it's emphasized in grade school and high school. By the time someone gets to college, it's not a requirement to take any sort of government class. Where do you think the gaps are?
As a veteran classroom teacher, what I came to believe as far as where the gaps in civic education have come to exist, I think happened as a result perhaps of the narrowing of curriculum that happened as a result of testing that happened as a result of No Child Left Behind. And in a large part, civic education was left behind. And I think now folks across the country are trying to close those gaps. And I would point to the efforts right here in Montana between the Office of Public Instruction and now the governor's office with me there as lieutenant governor. And I would point to the efforts made by former Justice Sandra Day O'Connor to promote civic education through her program iCivics. She was on campus here last fall and she spoke about those gaps specifically and the importance of closing those gaps and the important role that education plays in closing those gaps. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us in education and all of us who are policymakers and lawmakers to do all we can that when our students, so that when our students graduate from high school, they know about the important role they play in the decisions that will matter to them.
And how government works. That seems to be the biggest gap, isn't it?
It sure does, Sally. And I'll tell you that as a classroom teacher who for the last 13 or 14 years used the We the People curriculum, one of the most exciting opportunities I had was to work with my students to not only help them understand the basis and the framework for the United States government, but to have the opportunity on a lot of occasions to show them firsthand how each of the branches of government works. And I think one of the most exciting things we have in Montana is a Montana Supreme Court that's willing to go to college campuses so that the general citizenry and students from across the state can see what they do firsthand. And I think that that's an extraordinary, eye-opening experience and opportunity for our students. Additionally, we have lawmakers across our state, and we have a governor and now a lieutenant governor who looks so very forward to interacting with students, interacting with the general public, and making sure that they understand that we work for them. And I think in understanding that, I think then that folks will develop a comfort level and an understanding that they can reach out to us and more readily express their concerns and their wishes.
What's the role of media in civic education? And I'll give you a chance to take pot shots here, because many people think that because the media talks about the, quote, dark side of government and politics and emphasizes that, that has led to pervasive pessimism about government and that hurts people being committed to being civic-minded?
I think that's a really good question, Sally. And let me tell you, I think what the media does is I think the media can readily point out the dark side of politics. And I think that we've seen that, I think, with the unlimited contributions that can now be made. And I think the media, and rightfully so, has pointed that out time and time again. And I think we as a citizenry expect the media to do that. As a classroom teacher, my students would often refer to the media as the fourth branch of government. For without the media, the general population would not know about the exercises of the executive, the legislative, or the judiciary. And so the work of the media is critical. And I would tell you that at the end of the day, citizens across the state of Montana and citizens across the country need to be informed on the issues, because then they will have the capacity to determine what is biased media and what is truly fair media and appropriate media and appropriate coverage and balanced coverage. And I don't think that we can do that at the end of the day unless we are an educated citizenry. And I think that's what today's event is all about, is making sure that we have an educated citizenry so at the end of the day they can digest what it is the media puts out on the nightly news. And they can decide for themselves whether or not they agree or disagree. And I think those are some of the greatest skills we can give our students and our citizenry as a whole.
How to be critical.
Absolutely. We need to be critical consumers of just exactly what it is that's out there. And without a strong public education system, we cannot educate students to be critical consumers of that information and of that media. And so you know, I think as well as anybody, that the governor and I believe that education is key in so many areas. We believe it's the road to economic prosperity. We believe it is the road to protecting the American way of life. And so that is where our time, our energy, and our investments have been made, and they will continue to be made on behalf of the citizens of Montana that we serve.
You've segued into my next set of questions here, which is about education. You're a lifelong teacher, and you've served as chair of the Board of Regents. You know what it's like to beg for money from the legislature. How hard is it when you hear legislators say, public education is failing, or when you hear legislators say the universities are wasting money?
As a veteran classroom teacher and as somebody who spent almost 20 years as a classroom teacher, I saw classroom teachers and school administrators stretch a dollar as far as they could stretch it. And it is difficult, and it was difficult for me to hear that conversation. As the chairwoman of the Montana Board of Regents, there were concerns that came our way about the expenditures that would go through the Montana University system. And I can tell you that for every dollar that is invested in education, this state and our country reaps the benefits. And education in our youngest learners and in all of education, I think, is the single best investment we as a society can make, because by those investments in education, we preserve and protect this great democracy. We develop a strong workforce. We create jobs, and I think that we're seeing that right now as a result of strong efforts in the executive branch last legislative session. We saw just in this first part of the year, we've seen a growth of 5,000 jobs. I think that's extraordinary. And I think that we will continue to see economic development and economic growth in Montana. And that doesn't happen by accident. That happens when you have a leader like Governor Bullock who recognizes that for job growth and economic development to happen, you have to have a strong education. And he put the dollars where they needed to go in the Montana University system so that we could freeze tuition, so that we could make sure that more Montana students could stay here and work here. And at the end of the day, I cannot think of a better place to spend Montana's resources. And that is on our learners, who will be Montana's future.
you've only been in the job a couple of months, but you get to travel around the state, you were saying earlier, a couple of days a week at least. This is a pretty good gig, isn't it? You don't really have to take the heat the governor has to take, but you get to go around and do fun things and meet a lot of Montanans.
Absolutely, Sally. It has been an extraordinary 2 months. And in fact, yesterday on the 10th does mark the official 2 month anniversary for me in this post. And it has been a very rewarding and exciting 2 months. I got to make one hire, and I had the opportunity to hire McCall Flynn, who is one of my former students in Anaconda, as my assistant. And together we build my calendar, and we get out, and we visit with Montanans, and we have visited with folks from Wolf Point to Billings and Missoula to Arleigh, and we have a lot more travels pending, and we look forward to hearing from Montanans about what they expect from Governor Bullock and I, because let me tell you, I think that we have the capacity through effective government to do more than we've ever done for Montanans and for Montana students and for all of the folks north, south, and east to west. It's pretty exciting.
Well, I have been speaking with Lieutenant Governor Angela McLean. And Lieutenant Governor McLean, it's been a pleasure to have you in our studio. We hope you come back. Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much, Sally. It's been really nice being here, and I appreciate the great questions.
Now for this weekend's forecast. West of the Divide tonight should be mostly cloudy with some isolated rain showers and lows in the upper 20s to mid-30s. Tomorrow, there's a chance of rain and snow showers with highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. On Sunday, it calls for partly cloudy skies with a chance of snow in the morning. Then it should clear up in the afternoon and evening with highs in the mid-40s to lower 50s. In central Montana, there's a chance of rain and showers through the evening tonight. Snow showers are also likely after midnight with lows 30 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow, look for cloudy skies with rain and snow showers and highs 35 to 45 degrees. Sunday calls for mostly clear skies with a slight chance of snow and highs 35 to 40 degrees. And in southwest Montana tonight, look for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain and snow showers through the night. Expect lows 30 to 35 degrees. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies. Snow with rain showers are likely. Expect highs 45 to 55 degrees. On Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow with highs 35 to 45 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Sarah Howell.
There's a story in my family that goes back a few decades. It's the kind of story people like to pull out and dust off over the holidays when everyone is enjoying some cheer and good company. The story goes something like this. When I was very young, my parents decided to load my brother and I up and make a long road trip from Billings to Columbus, Ohio, to visit grandparents and other family for Christmas. The trip takes about 24 hours of driving time under the best of circumstances. When you're traveling in an old Plymouth Horizon with your young family in the dead of winter, well, you see what we were up against. So the story goes that on day two of the drive, I got upset. Maybe my brother was encroaching on my space. Maybe I was just tired of the car. In any case, I started wailing and hollering. And before long, dark clouds blew in, snow began to fall, and we were driving in a blizzard. Well, Sarah, my father said, you did it. You cried up a storm. I have my own 2-year-old now. I think back to that story often, especially when my son takes issue with the world and how we run it. This time of year, though, now that the snow is gone and the sun is out, I'm thinking about the story in another frame of mind. I'm thinking about how my family drove 1,600 miles across 8 states on paved, plowed, and patrolled highways. About how we visited the Columbus Zoo on New Year's Day. About how we lit up the Christmas tree and talked on the phone to relatives. And how, when we were back in Billings, my brother and I returned to school to tell our friends all about it. What do all these things have to do with this time of year? They're paid for by taxes. Next Tuesday is tax day. I suspect we'll hear our fair share of complaints. Taxes seem to have an awfully bad reputation these days. But this year, I want to celebrate the amazing things our taxes support, from schools to parks, roads to public safety. All these programs and services make Montana a great place to live and help keep our families and communities safe, strong, and healthy. The truth is, Montana is a great place to live and work because generations before us have made wise investments in education, infrastructure, and safe, healthy communities. To continue to grow Montana's economy and ensure our children and grandchildren can stay and succeed here, we need to build on this foundation. A responsible budget both adequately invests in today's needed public services while also preparing Montana for future demands caused by an evolving economy and changing demographics. And a balanced budget is supported by an adequate, equitable, and sustainable tax structure. This year, I'm thankful my family can swim, float, and fish in the world-class rivers and streams Montana is known for, and also come home and drink safe, fresh water from the tap. I'm thankful that come fire season, my community will be protected from forest fires by the best firefighters around. I'm thankful my son can attend the public elementary school down the street when he's old enough in a few years, alongside his friends from the neighborhood. And I'm thankful that anyone in my community, regardless of income, can access health care through our community health center. I'm proud that my taxes support my community, that our shared investment as Montanans makes this state a place we all want to call home. So next week, on tax day, don't just think about those taxes that disappear from your paycheck. Think about where they go and how we're all better off for it. I'm Sarah Howell with Montana Women Vote. Thanks for listening and have a terrific weekend.
Sarah Howell is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. And thanks again to Dan Boyce for everything. Good luck, Dan.